Part 13, Chapter 3. Dunaldin was a very happy man. The Cornwall compound of the British Isles was dead ahead, lit up like the one-time cities must have been. They had drawn straws for Cornwall. This was the mine site that sent out hunting parties and made it death for Scots to go south. The cyclos at this place, over the centuries, had gunned down people beyond count, just for sport on their days off. There was even a tale of a raiding party captured and tied to trees and shot tiny bit by tiny bit and man by man for 18 agonizing days. And many tales like it. He and his co-pilot, Dwight, had drawn the long straw to the envy of their fellow pilots. They had drilled the navigation. No Scot had ever gotten within 100 miles of this mine site in over 1,000 years, and little was actually known of it. But they had absorbed what there was. They had lain all night, quite relaxed, warmly dressed for stratosphere flying. They had heard the warning horns go for the final firing of the semi-annual. They had piled into their seats, hands waiting at the consoles. Wide-eyed and thrilled, they had watched Johnny's incredible sprint. Something had gone wrong as he reached the cage, and that part wasn't so good. No rescue. But Johnny had piled down under the edge of the bluff, safe as a wee bairn in his truckle bed, before the blast rifles went. The recoil had been a bit disconcerting, for it had slewed the plane out of position with concussion. But all was well. They had vaulted their plane into the sky on schedule. They had seen the planet-wide radio towers collapse in a tangle of cables behind them, hit by both the concussion of recoil and bazooka fire. A 12-hour radio silence had begun successfully. Ample time for the farthest mine site to be reached without any warning. At 2,000 miles an hour, 100,000 feet up, they had shifted the clock and come down to normal cyclo approach levels to a nighttime mine site. There it was. Scanners and view screens alight. They found no sign of hostile action, no guard planes in the air. Lighted steam was coming out of some shafts in the hills that must be 5 miles deep. Smelter chimneys belched curling green smoke. Warehouses stood in bold outline. And there were the glowing domes of the compound. Target one. But Dunaldin, being Dunaldin, was quick to take advantage of sudden opportunities, even when they were not quite specified in planning. The silly apes down there lit up the whole landing area for him. It gleamed like a bloody stage. They thought he was simply some non-scheduled cyclo flight. Bless radio silence. And Dunaldin saw something else. Strung on massive power poles, coming down from the north, was their power supply. And right there, in the full glare of the landing area, was the obvious master pole. The freaks cared nothing about an aerial navigation menace. It was the master pole. The lines from the north came down into it. The local light cables all routed out from it to the buildings and compound. There was a big open space for landing and takeoff in the middle of this spider's web. Right at the side of the landing stage was a huge wheel. Dunaldin recognized it. The master wheel that, when spun, withdrew the master bus bar from the circuit.